Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Good morning, this is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone. And happy Halloween out there.
Well, Halloween came early on Wall Street this week.
I believe it did.
Actually, pretty much, well, half the month. I mean, this week alone, the S&P's down roughly 5%. And since the The date on the high was October 12th, right in the middle of the month. And it's been downhill sledding since then. Basically, it was bribe the investors for a couple of weeks and then take it all away. I mean, they take the candy away. So we end up with a month that is just barely down a little bit. But government threats of renewed lockdowns in Europe kind of started off this week, or really kind of cemented the downtrend, with the S&P down rapidly on Wednesday. It was kind of a, well, if it was an earthquake, we'd call it, it was a rumble. You know, it didn't really knock anything off the walls, but it did make you wake up. And Thursday looked like it was all over, and then the aftershocks came in on Friday. So it continued its way down. Of course, one of the things that happens is we get phone calls and say, well, what's the election going to do to the market?
Big topic, you bet. Yep.
Everyone who calls has an opinion, and they're looking for confirmation. That's what you do when you ask somebody else for an opinion, right? You say, please confirm mine.
I'm right about this, right? Yeah.
The problem with forecast is actually nobody knows. Even the pollsters no longer know. I mean, Pew Research admitted this recently, in the last couple of weeks, that the response rate for polls is down to 6%. For every 100 people they manage to call and get some contact, only 6 actually participate.
6%? Wow, that is low. That is low.
Well, consider, you know, a lot of people don't even have landlines anymore. They're on cell phones.
That's true. I was just thinking off that most of those polls, like the margin for error is 3-4%. If only 6% are responding, that's almost 100% error possibility in there.
Well, that's good. That's true. I hadn't thought of it that way. But I do not answer the landline at home. Rarely.
Right.
But
right.
Generally, I ignore it.
That's a great filter.
That's my wife's line, and she has the call block button down to an automatic process. So all these calls that come through, and you see them on the screen, and it's call block,
bye-bye.
Call block.
Yeah.
We're not participating in these surveys, but in an age where people routinely lose their jobs, their wealth, even marriages. I mean,
sure.
For the wrong political opinion. I mean, you married somebody for love, for better or worse, and you loved them until, of course, you find out they're voting for the other party.
You're voting for who? Yeah. Well, that changes everything. Yeah.
And finally, there's the fact that only 20% of Americans actually trust the government. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah, actually, that number sounds pretty strong. I mean, 20% still hanging in there. Huh? Okay, well.
But I'm from the government here, and I'm here to help you.
There you go. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, apparently that help is no longer considered very reliable. It has, however, pumped up the economy this year. So we're only a couple of days away, and we have no forecast. I've already voted. My wife's voted. I don't know about you, Perry.
Sure. Are
you
already voted? No.
You're not waiting to make up your mind.
No, I'm really hoping we get some resolution on election day, but not holding out a lot of hope for that. Yeah.
So we're really facing a decision between globalism and nationalism. I mean, the globalism is the way we've been trending for the last several decades, which means we outsource jobs to cheaper international markets. We rely extensively on other countries for energy, commodities, pharmaceuticals. Okay, it wasn't in my list, but it came to mind. And the U.S. becomes just one more vote in the U.N. or the G7 to determine how the world is going to operate. Nationalism, on the other hand, says we need domestic production of resources that are deemed critical to our economy as a matter of national security, that outsourcing weakens our economy strategically, and that the U.S. is, in fact, the dominant force in the world, and as such, we can decide what we want to do. We don't have to get permission from the rest of the world about how we are going to operate as a country.
Indeed.
That's what we hope will be resolved on Tuesday. Anyway, one of the things that millionaires, next Saturday is an important day. One, we hopefully will have some resolution whether going into globalism or nationalism as a national policy, and we'll take a look at how the market responds to that outcome during the week, and we're doing that on a webinar. One we did on kind of a last-minute webinar because of Wednesday's meltdown, and if you want to see that, it's only 30 minutes, and we really explain very succinctly how we have dealt with this and why we had been transitioning to defensive position, and we ended up, we're now in cash in our accounts, having saved our clients a lot of money this past week, past 2 weeks, actually.
You bet.
And if you go to our website, iriradio.com, on the video tab, it says Halloween came early. You can click that. You can watch what we covered on Friday. But we have another one, our standard first of the month, first Saturday of the month, we do a market update webinar that is yet to be put together because we don't have next week's data yet.
We need current information. That's right.
Yeah. So a lot of people build portfolios on two basic options. They look at long-term averages and say, that's good enough for me. I'm sure it's going to work out in the long term. And I am a long-term investor until things really crash. Or they say, I have an opinion about how things are going to happen, and this is what should happen, and therefore this is what I am going to buy. We, however, require MGI. MGI stands for market-generated information. If we can't see it on a chart, if we can't put numbers to it in a table, then it is not going into our portfolio. And you sign up for that. Go to iriradio.com. And on the front page of the website, lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks and you'll be able to put in your email and we'll send you,
Thank goodness.
A link. Yeah. The computer will send you a link to join us next Saturday right after the show. And if you can't stay after the show because you have other plans, as long as you register, you will get a replay link once the video recording is processed. Anyway, everybody kind of thinks, I'd like to be a millionaire. Of course you'd like to be a millionaire, especially if it's more than you have right now. If you already are one, most of the time people are saying, well, a million's not enough.
That big a deal. Yeah, exactly.
It's not that big a deal anymore. I thought it would be, but here I am and I still feel broke. It's what's a million? When you should have two or 10, you know. The problem that most millionaires, once they get there, realize, based on a survey that apparently millionaires did respond to, is that relying on the guidance from historical returns was their biggest investment mistake.
How about that?
Shades of modern portfolio theory, which is
top of the list. I mean, this was a survey. 752 millionaire investors responded to this survey, and the single largest response was that was the biggest mistake they made, relying on historical returns to build their portfolio. That's incredible. It's people with money to invest notice first because they have the most money at risk. And what they noticed right away was relying on that 80-year average doesn't do your portfolio any good at all. That's amazing.
Part of what they figured out is you have to be adaptable because the economy and the markets are dynamic. So what's an average for an decades long have to do with today's world? I need to take a look at what's going on today. Recent history, we will go back a month, a quarter, but we're not going back 20, 50, 80, 90 years to figure out how markets are responding.
No, we don't care what was successful last year. It doesn't matter. That's too long ago these days. It's things change too dramatically. They change too quickly to be basing what you're doing today on what happened 12 months ago. It just doesn't make any sense.
I was on the phone with a gentleman this past week, and he's asking questions about our process and how we do and how we've handled the last couple of years. And he said to me, I know past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance. And that phrase has been kind of ingrained into everybody, because anybody who publishes returns has to put a disclaimer in that this has absolutely nothing to do with the future, because the future is unknown. They don't put that part in there. But with the fundamental shifts in the economies and market, this statement that looking backwards has nothing to do with looking forward is more appropriate than it has been in years. I mean, look at all the changes we've been through this year. This has been an exceptional year. COVID, shutdowns. Who's ever seen the economy globally shut down? Unless it was wartime.
Voluntarily, yeah. Because we wanted to. We thought it was a good idea. And closed it down globally. And never seen that before. Never happened before. It's amazing.
I think it's break time, Perry.
Want to go ahead and get out of here? I'm a little bit early. What the heck? It is Halloween. Might as well scare Mike over there. He's like, what? We're going to get out on time. If you would like to see our next webinar, where we are going to update on what's going on out there right now, what we're doing about it, and what you may be able to apply to your portfolio, you can go to iriradio.com, go to the webinar page, give it a click to register for the November market update. It's coming up Saturday, November 7th, 9:15, right after the show. You're going to get an email link. You just give that a click on next Saturday morning. And you will be live online with us, and you're going to be able to see our charts. We always have time for you to ask questions. We want you to be able to get your questions in. We can show you some data, usually about the topic that your question is focused on, and give you a little clarity. It really helps to give you a clearer look at what's going on when you can really see what we're looking at. So that webinar is next Saturday, November 7th, 9:15, and you can register at iriradio.com. If you have a question for us here this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757, and we would love to talk to you this morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, sometimes there are days we wish would never come, but Monday's coming anyway. We've got a day break to wait for it. Well, Sunday goes through the calendar, but Monday's still going to be here. And one of the things that is interesting in the finance world is the people who, at least momentarily, rise to the top and they receive an award. And one of those companies that gives awards regularly is Morningstar. And as I was looking at this article that you found, Perry, it brought back memories. I don't know when you first got in the business and whether or not you saw this happen, but when Morningstar first started publishing reports on mutual funds, data, performance, portfolio stuff that they could gather from, I don't know where they got it, but there were two different publications. One publication was Load Funds for brokers, and then there was another publication that was limited to no load funds for investors who were doing it themselves. And by that time, I actually had left the brokerage business, and I had started this company. I was operating by myself, one person staff, and I went to the No Load Fund conference because they had two conferences. They kept the brokers and the independent investors separate.
That's not the same group. That's right. Yeah.
But those are obviously now combined because there's not that much difference between them. But one of the things that developed in that process, people are looking for, well, which of these funds is actually the good fund? So they created the STAR system. And we now have STAR managers that run these STAR funds. And what does that mean? Well, that means they had a good track record over a recent period of time. What does it mean for the future? Well, as we were just talking in the last segment.
What was that story about past performance? Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. But I remember dealing with people, investors, some clients calling me and saying, why aren't we in this STAR fund? And I said, well, the STAR doesn't mean anything. What do you mean it doesn't mean anything? It's a STAR fund. The manager's been doing really good. Look at that. If I'd owned that fund this year, I'd be up 15%. Well, not necessarily. reading those past numbers, people assumed that was what was going to be credited to their account in the future. And hopefully most investors have figured out that's not the case. But we do like STARs. However, the research shows that if your team is a STAR, that's really good. And there's some desire to credit stardom to Russell Wilson, for instance. But that application doesn't really go very far when it comes to the investment world.
Correct. I just thought this article was fascinating because there are so many things that are just true in life that hold just as true in investing. And people always look at investing as different. It's a different thing. And nothing, you know, there's not a lot of it is. Investing is people. People act like human beings, and human beings react the same to most things out there. And boy, this is another one. People love stars. They're much more attracted to a star performer than a great team, than a big organization that's a machine. You'll appreciate that, but you're going to really pull for that individual. And the same thing is true in investing. It's amazing.
Well, and we have to welcome Gene from North Carolina back to our show. It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked to you, Gene, but welcome. Happy Halloween.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I listen to you every week. I just don't call in. My question is about something that sounds the same, but maybe you can explain maybe the difference. It deals with the price of gold and inflation versus the expectation or the fear of inflation. It sounds to me like the price of gold goes up when there's real inflation, and it also goes up when people expect or have a fear of inflation. Does that sound right to you?
It does. That's just one more instance of investor sentiment. If there's a belief that something is about to occur, the market adjusts to that, and that's not always a good thing. That's why we don't buy in 100% to the efficient market theory that the market is all information. It is all information that's currently available. It's also everybody's emotion, and that emotion gets in there, and people will say, the government is dumping tons of money that is going to require inflation. It will happen. Let's buy gold. That's the insurance against the inflation when there is no sign of that actually occurring. But you can talk it up. You can talk it down. In any asset class, it happens quite often.
Yeah, so the companies go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, what I was going to say, follow up, is just that I started thinking about this when I looked at a graph of the price of gold. And, of course, it broke the old record this year when it went up during the summer past $2,000 an ounce. But the previous record, I believe, was back in 2011. From 2011,
correct,
it went down like a letter U and then came back up to the other part of the letter U, which it is now. So back in 2011, it was the fear of inflation, of quantitative easing or whatever it was after 2008 and 2009, the crash. But between then and now, actual inflation really never happened.
Correct. And it doesn't really have to in investing. It's just like it's like the price of anything. It's like looking at the price of Tesla. You know, Tesla, they don't sell many cars compared to many, many other companies that are significantly larger, but they're getting this gigantic market cap because people believe in Elon Musk, and that's who we're investing in.
That's a great story.
Yep, and we're going to buy that, whether it's reality or not. We love the story. We're all piling in. It goes up, and more people pile in because it went up, and there you go.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Gene.
Thanks for calling in, Gene. He's actually made an observation that I've had to explain to a number of inquiries this week about gold. Some phone calls. I know we had some people on the Friday webinar who were there because they had asked about gold. And it did peak in 2011. In fact, we were on a different station at the time. And when that happened, we said on the air, it's time to get out of gold and emerging markets, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And
right.
And they crashed. I mean, the assumption that quantitative easing was going to just destroy our economy, and it may eventually, but the assumption that these two were highly correlated was a mistake. This is where you get investor regret, because I bought at a high, and here I am 3, 4, 5, 6 years later, and I'm still underwater big time. And that's where we hear, well, I'm not going to sell until I get even. And now that I'm even, well, it's actually going to work now.
My story is still true. Yeah. So this is, I'm just going to keep hanging on for another decade.
But the inflation issue, I think that inflation may start showing up in government data within the next 2 or 3 years. But right now, one of the things I do track every night after the market's done is I look at the continuous gold futures. So they continue to be in a downtrend. And yet you have companies who sell gold. What do they have to say? It's always a good time to buy gold. It doesn't matter what the price is. You want to have it for the future financial collapse when the world is back in depression. Now, I don't think you will be able to buy anything with gold because it is not a currency. You need to barter with it. And what are you going to do? You're going to shave off a little bit of gold flake and weigh it on a scale and say, well, I'll give you this much. I mean, that people assume that we're going to go back to a gold standard. And if we do, we will be in a global depression, because the amount of money that is outstanding in debt around the world, whether it's government debt, corporate debt, or personal debt, if we're back on a gold standard, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but my guess is something between 90 and 95% of that debt has to be wiped out. And no government is going to voluntarily do that.
No.
You will have civil unrest, the likes of which we have not yet seen in our lifetimes. And talking about things that you regret on the forecast, even some of the brightest guys in the money management business have made some pretty grievous errors in their estimation of what was going to happen just this year. Jeffrey Gundlach, one of the biggest money managers, big in terms of dollars managed, back in April, end of April of this year. I'm certainly in the camp that we are not out of the woods. A retest of the lows is very plausible. I think we'll take out the low of March. Well, that didn't happen. Stanley Druckenmiller in May, after the market has gone up about for a month, it was a pretty significant rise. And we were, frankly, we were still concerned that the economic news did not support the rally that continued in the subsequent months.
Didn't match up at all, no. But our market was moving.
But Druckenmiller said the risk reward for equity may be as bad as I have seen it in my entire career. Well, that wasn't good. You know, with these forecasts, when they're wrong, they don't go to Twitter and confess.
No, you never see the retraction, and you almost feel sorry for these guys. Once you get famous, once you're managing a lot of money, once you're in charge of a huge hedge fund, you're almost required to be out there and giving your opinion about what's going to happen. And just by the very nature of those forecasts, even those guys, they're going to be wrong most of the time. But they're still out there talking it up. But it's important to remember that those guesses about what's coming up, it doesn't matter who's making the guess, it's still just a guess.
If you want to talk to us, we do have an open line. The number, magic number, 888-312-5757. If you want to talk to us during the week, there's a different magic number. That's 800-317-9119.
And it is the bottom of the hour. It is time for us to get out of here. Take another break here this morning. I'd like to remind you that coming up next Saturday is our market update webinar, November 7th at 9:15, right after the show. We'll be going live online. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page, give it a click. You will get an email back with a link in it. And next Saturday morning after the show, you just click on that. And you will be live online with us. We'll give you a market update. You're going to get some good education about what's going on. You're going to get a good look at what's going on in the markets currently. And then we always save plenty of time for your questions so that you can get a little clarity in your personal life. You can ask questions about the market. You can ask questions about the economy or individual securities in your portfolio that you'd like a second opinion on. We will take all comers, and we stay until we get those questions answered. So it's a really good time to get a little clarity in there. Again, just go to iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong. You better hold.
Well, that's true, but strength isn't always recognized. However, one of our favorite TV programs is the American Ninja Warrior.
Aha.
And we find it really entertaining, but it's also become a real family event, and particularly even with the COVID deal. I mean, they have big jumbo screens where they have the family and friends and stuff who aren't coming to the event, who are still able on the video to be able to support these people, who some of whom have just phenomenal physical strength, but they didn't get there overnight.
That's one of those shows where I never find myself saying I could do that. It's like no, I can't do that. So
there was one guy this last week we watched, and I said, I have abs like that. And Linda looked at me and she said, no, you don't. I said, I do too. I'm built the same way. They just don't show like his do. but I have abs.
Yeah.
They're just not. They haven't had the time and attention spent getting them to the same place. And I don't see myself doing that. But there are a lot of things that are important in our economy that are kind of like that. They take time to develop. Cycles take time to develop. Innovation takes time to develop. One of the things, we have overnight miracles that everybody wants to have, but a lot of the miracles in life didn't happen overnight. It's just like the number of people who have died of heart disease. It's been declining about 1.5% a year, and if that showed up on the evening news, you go,
nobody would care. Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, that's great. What's the weather going to be tomorrow?
Yeah, but some of these, and then on the other side of that is the miracle. You take something like Netflix, for instance, and you look at it historically, the stock has returned 35,000% between 2002 and 18.
That's pretty good.
the issue here is that 94% of the time in virtually almost two decades, 94% of the time it's below its previous high. It's struggling. It's out of favor. Now, how many investors owned it in 2002 and still owned it at the end of 18? Well, the founder, the original, probably some of the original stockholders before it became an IPO, maybe. But as far as publicly traded, there's no record. The number rounds down to zero.
Nobody hangs in there through that kind of volatility. It just doesn't happen, which is one of the reasons that, you know, you were talking about regret earlier, Don. It's like, only if I had bought Netflix and hung on to it. Well, nobody did. No, nobody did that. That's not a realistic expectation.
So there's big runs up, but nobody wants the big run down that's on the other side. The uncertainty as a company goes through reinventing itself. And we have a lot of that going on in technology today. We had companies that reported good earnings this week and their stocks fell because their guide, well, in some cases, they didn't even have guidance for this quarter. They have no clue what to expect in the way of sales and earnings.
And that's what, good news takes time. Like that Netflix run, that was 16 years. It took 16 years. Now, that's a huge return, but you would have had to hang in there for 16 years through some very bad news. And that's the problem. When the bad news hits, if you own Apple or Amazon or Facebook or Microsoft right now, the last week and a half or 2 weeks have been tough. All of a sudden, Apple, which always goes up, is down 5% in a day. It's like, whoa, what happened here? And so you have to take the stairs up, but it's the elevator down, people head for the exits quickly when that happens, because bad news hits very, very quickly, and good news may take decades to build.
So the theory of modern finance is that those down days don't matter. Those down years don't matter. Losing 50% of your value in your portfolio does not matter because you don't need the money. And you can change your plans, but you're already retired. You thought you actually were planning on using the money. Yeah, that's the problem here. But that modern portfolio theory actually is a mirage. Now, there are a lot of guys who have received substantial recognition for very fancy financial formulas. Markowitz, to begin with, back in 1952, with the theory that risk isn't losing your money. Risk is just volatility in your portfolio. Well, I would bet that most people would say, no, real risk is losing my money.
Talk to a person. Yeah, academically, that may be so. But in reality, that's not what you're going to have it show up in your portfolio. And when you're losing money consistently, you're going to want to do something about it. It's just that inside of modern portfolio theory, there's nothing to be done. You just wait, and because it'll all work out, and it will. It doesn't matter how many decades it takes; it'll work out. And it might not be in time to save your retirement. That's the that's the difference between an academic theory and reality when you are relying on your portfolio for what's currently happening in your life.
So Markowitz ended up with this theory, which value at risk became the junk bond market, which collapsed not too long after Milken created it. But man, the firm and Milken themselves made a lot of money in the initial run. Now, junk bonds have been recreated. I mean, they are still in the market. They are managed a little differently, but that risk of collapse and disappearance is still there. Then we got collateralized mortgage obligations.
Ooh, that was a winner.
We know how that worked with the real estate market back in the 08-09. Modern finance is just a great big huge edifice. It's the super ego of the financial industry, and it ignores the biblical guide to construction, which is build on a rock, not on sand. And the financial edifice here is built on sand. It has no firm foundation.
It truly is. There's just nothing under it, and we've been saying that for a long, long time, and now it's creeping into academia itself. There's actual PhDs out there who are going through this and saying, "Hey, how long are we going to let modern finance lead us astray?" Seeing as it doesn't ever work out the way it's supposed to, in reality, nothing that we have built on modern portfolio theory follows through either, because that doesn't exactly work the way it was supposed to in the first place. And people are finally coming to grips with the fact that, you know what, this might not be the great idea we thought it was. And you know, we've been saying for years that it's not a great idea anyway. It's 90% sales pitch, and that's what's used to get you in and keep your money in a single firm. And you can't leave now because you're going to miss what's coming up. You know, and it's just a sales pitch, and it's becoming recognized as such now.
Well, what's recognized is modern finance theory was responsible for the 94 bond market crash. It was responsible for the global financial crisis of 2007 and 8 that finished in 9. That was, you know, that was cinemascopic view of the error.
Epic. Long, yeah.
Yeah. Long-term capital management collapsed in the late 90s just because of over-reliance on a new option pricing theory. These are basically a straight line drawn out of modern portfolio theory is the basis for the collateralized mortgage obligations and the global financial collapse. Black Mondays, Great Recessions, they actually show that this theory doesn't work. Otherwise, Black Monday should never have occurred. The Great Recession should never have occurred. Bear markets, according to the theory, are only going to occur once in 300,000 years. And we've had 17 of them since 1929. Now, there's something disconnected here, and nobody wants to talk about it. It's the elephant in the room. It's kind of like
the difference between academia and reality. You know, if you go back to the dot-com bubble, you know, which was a crazy tech bubble, crazy mispricing of assets. And if you go and you ask, you know, Eugene Fama, the father of the efficient market theory, you know, how bad do you think this bubble is? His response in writing was, well, there's no bubble. Bubbles, investment bubbles don't exist. This market's efficient, so there's no such thing as a bubble. Don't worry about this. You know, it'll all resolve itself. Well, it will. It did resolve itself in huge losses for large numbers of people who believe that the paradigm had changed and this market was never going down again. And why worry about this if this bubble that we know we're in is not really a bubble anyway? Well, that's only academically speaking. In reality, it was a gigantic bubble, and when it popped, lots of people lost lots of money, and that's reality. That's where you need to be managing your portfolio, not on an academic theory that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the real markets.
Which is why we abandoned modern portfolio theory in our practice. And it's a question that comes up is one of the reasons we internally keep a lot of documentation about why we make trades in the account, because we are not using this long-term average and assuming everything's going to be okay. When you do that, you basically have an account where the advisor doesn't have to do anything. I mean, basically hold your hand. Once you've answered some risk questions, it's on autopilot from there on out. And we'll, you know, just don't bother us. You know, it's okay. You know, look, you answered these questions. We built the portfolio based on your responses, and the computer did the calculation. And so we're in the right portfolio. Now, if you happen to change your mind about risk or in your situation, you can answer the questions differently. And then we'll reconsider whether or not recalculate how your portfolio should be. In the meantime, just leave me alone.
What you see is what you get, and you're not getting anything else. And that is just not a good idea. But another good idea is taking a break. We are at our last break of the morning here. We have plenty of time to get your questions on the board. Here we got a full segment remaining. If you'd like to give us a call at 888-312-5757, that is 888-312-5757. If you don't get our week in review, that is our weekly email that goes out most Mondays. It's just a look at the economic news of the past week and give you an idea about what parts of that are important and what parts of that you can probably safely ignore. There's so much noise out there. It's a good piece. It's written in plain English. Give you a little clarity for the week. Again, if you would like to receive that, just send us an email at help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Put week in review in the subject line. We need your first and last name. You'll be signed up for that, and you will start receiving that this Monday. Again, we've got a full segment left. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You got to know.
Well, that's one thing that does not happen with modern portfolio theory. There is never a day to walk away from the market, or you don't walk away from your portfolio positions until disaster has overtaken them. And that's kind of the way the S&P works. They don't put companies in the index until they've had years of outperformance, and they don't take them out of the index until they're sitting at the doorstep of the courthouse waiting to file their bankruptcy papers.
Bye-bye. Yep, that's the way it goes. So it's way behind the curve.
Yeah. One of the things that's way behind the curve is oil.
Amazing.
Who needs oil anymore? Well, frankly, I mean, the world needs oil because it runs on oil-based products. And even though the price of oil is very low, which is causing problems in the Mideast, you know, don't you feel sorry for right. Saudi Arabia and those other Arabs over there who used to blackmail the United States of America because we needed their oil, and now we outproduce, we have more oil reserves, we control the price of oil more than they do. We can supply our own oil needs. It took a long time to get there, but the world has changed when it comes to energy. And you look at the irony of things. California, they've been shifting to green energy. They have solar and wind. In fact, it's been a long time since I've flown over California, but you fly over California in a clear day, And you get out over the desert, and you see all this reflection coming. It's their solar generating fields that they have out there.
Sure.
They get hot enough, they kill the birds. But they can't generate enough energy to keep the lights on or your refrigerator or your freezer or your air conditioner when they have to shut down a traditional power source. Regular energy is not going away for a very long time. The green energy is decades from being able to generate consistent, reliable power. But oil at $37 a barrel has cut down the amount of fracking that we are doing. The costs are a little higher than that.
Well,
are changing.
At the top of the article there, Don, if you notice, they were talking about that was earlier this year when the futures market went to negative $37 a barrel. The oil, the price delivery for a barrel of oil went negative, and they noticed that really nothing happened. Nothing happened. That was a very unusual time when, it was during the shutdown, during the pandemic. No one wanted to take delivery of any oil. There's a worldwide glut. And while you are correct that we're going to be using oil for a long, long time, the equation has changed so much from a handful of countries that control the supply to everyone's got more than they need. That does the price of oil mean anything anymore? Back, in the 70s, wow, that's I just got hit in the face and realized that was 50 years ago. In the 70s, way back in the 70s, that used to be announced every day on the news. Price of oil today, the price of oil today. You know, we had the oil embargo and the price of oil was critical. The price of oil now doesn't matter. It is inconsequential. Because the supply and demand equation has changed. We still have demand. Demand's going down, but we still have plenty of demand for oil, if not directly to burn it for energy. It is a ingredient in millions of products worldwide. But now we have an almost unusable supply. We have more oil than a century. We can't consume it all. So all of a sudden, that changes a great deal, and that's one of those fundamental economic indicators that changes. One of the reasons why 80 years of past performance don't matter. The price of oil used to be a big deal. That was a major driver of economic growth or economic slowdowns. Can we get oil? Do we have enough oil that we can even stay in business around here? None of that matters anymore. That's a huge, huge shift. And that needs to be reflected in the way people view markets. And if oil goes to negative $37 a barrel for a monthly delivery on oil futures, and it doesn't even matter, that's an indicator that, hey, you know what? Oil's not what it used to be. That's one of those indicators that we just don't have to be that concerned about anymore.
But it's also historically an indicator of inflation. And I happen, this just like I track gold futures, I track oil futures just to see what's going on, because it's still built into economic forecasting tools. We want to know what's there. But as an indicator of inflation, this would be a negative indicator for the resurging inflation. And going back to Gene's call regarding gold and inflation, actually on Friday's on the moment, spur of the moment webinar that we did, I did address inflation. Government calculates inflation in a way that benefits government. It's not true inflation. And I introduced the viewers on that webinar to another company that's been tracking inflation. And they track 500 items that families buy on a regular basis in the 50 largest cities in the United States. And the 5-year average for those 500 items is inflation is actually running somewhere between 9 and 11%. That's a lot different than what the Fed is looking at, saying that inflation is at 1.5. And the TIPS, inflation-protected treasuries, would suggest that inflation, expected inflation, is about 1.8. Yet these 500 items from families in 50 major cities say it's, let's call it 10. That's a big discrepancy. But it hasn't shown up in pricing in very many places that the financial markets are addressing yet. But as I said in an earlier segment, I think in the next couple of years, this situation is going to get resolved. But the government's not looking forward to it, because rising inflation means rising interest rates, and all of this massive debt becomes a real problem if interest rates are not in the 2-3 range. And I don't know how the Fed suppresses interest rates when the market starts demanding higher rates. That's yet to be resolved. So there's a day out in the future where gold, as a traditional hedge against inflation, may return to a reasonable risk adjusted exposure, be able to put it back in a portfolio. Currently, the trend remains down. We watch it. None of our portfolios currently own it. Did recently have it for a brief period of time in the aggressive account, but sold it at a 2% loss because it was not the resurrection of price faded very quickly.
Yeah, gold is just It's in our process. Gold is just another asset that's either in favor or out of favor. If gold is doing well, we got no problem owning gold. It's just another one of those things you never want to just buy it and hang on to it. It's not worth what it can do to your portfolio when it's on the downside, and it goes on the downside just like everything else does.
Something else that does and is, and that's real estate. This is going to shake up an awful lot of people, but the work from home routine has helped residential real estate in areas that are not close to the civil unrest that is happening in central cities. And so you get further out. We talked about this last week, but what's not really being seen yet is the massive impact on commercial real estate. Whether it's, well, it's big buildings that have typically had big anchors in them, where you now see them on the news having their storefronts boarded up to avoid looters coming in and destroying the insides of the building, besides taking everything that's not nailed down.
The inside of the empty building.
Right.
Because there's no one there. So.
But rental space in the commercial arena in major cities is dropping significantly. San Francisco so far is the largest decline, but New York City rents there are declining. And now if you own a business, it's likely that you're getting solicitations to move to a new location because they can sublease space for less than you are paying your rent, and you can just walk away from it. What are they going to do about it? Well, the repricing of real estate properties based on the ability to generate rents is going to probably take a decade to work its way all the way down to the bottom.
A lot of adjusting has to go in. That's right.
Sooner or later, the published prices are going to be dropping. What's not being published right now is the concessions that can be obtained from the landlord just trying to bribe you to come in and rent some space. Please, please, rent from me. No, rent from me. No, I got a better deal. Rent from me. Anyway, this is a big problem, and real estate has been in the market has been overpriced. Fortunately, we've not owned that. Register for our next Saturday's webinar at irradio.com, irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, couple of clicks, and you'll be registered. If you can't attend, you'll get a replay link. Want to talk to us during the week? 800-317-9119. Lord willing, we'll be back then. Have a great weekend.
The preceding program was paid for by Investor Resources and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KVI management and staff.
KVI Seattle. Tune in and tune up. From hermeneutical to pharmaceutical.